There's been a lot of talk about how Beijing's air pollution is affecting athletes' performances in the 2008 Olympics. But how are China's pollution problems affecting the physical and intellectual development of Chinese children? With me now for Underreported is Dr. Frederica Pereira, director of Columbia University's Center for Children's Environmental Health. She's done extensive studies on the link between air pollution and children's health in China. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Karen.
So what kind of air pollution have you focused on in your studies?
In our studies, we have focused on the combustion products from fossil fuel burning and other sources, other burning sources. And our studies have covered a broad geographical area. We started our work in Poland. We're also doing studies in New York City and more recently in China, focusing on these same air pollutants, which are global. Mm-hmm. Ubiquitous pollutants.
Now, they're called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which is, you know, the word aromatic is kind of throws you off just a little bit. Tell us a little bit about these PAHs, or I guess PAHs,
yes.
Would you call them?
PAHs for short. Yes, they sound nicer than they are. They're actually quite toxic. Mm-hmm. They are known to be carcinogenic, to have reproductive and developmental effects in laboratory models, and our own work has indicated that they have those effects in humans.
Now, what kind of activities produce these PAHs?
Well, burning sources, any burning of organic material.
Oh, okay. So it's not necessarily just car exhaust. It could be a coal-burning place.
Well, yes, coal-burning is a major source of PAHs. Mm-hmm. As are traffic emissions, burning of gasoline. In other words, fossil fuel is a major source. You also have these chemicals in tobacco smoke, and so in our studies we control for that exposure.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that PAHs are found all over the world. Are they a particular concern in China?
They are a concern in China, as they have been to us in Poland and in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Let me explain that 20 years ago, lo these many years, my colleagues and I actually started studies of the effects of air pollution on children when they were exposed in utero, that is, during the fetal developmental period, because
right.
That's a very sensitive life stage.
Sure.
So we did these first studies, and we demonstrated in Poland and then in New York City that these pollutants have harmful effects on fetal growth, reducing birth weight, head circumference, and then later showed in more recently in New York that the same pollutants exposure, this is in utero, did affect mental development at age 3 in New York City children. So when we were able to go to China and do a different kind of study, mm-hmm. to study an actual intervention where a major source of these pollutants was eliminated in a city, and study the before and after, children born before and after the shutdown, we had the opportunity to do a sort of good news story and document the benefits of this government action.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that in just a minute, but I'm curious about, are you still tracking those people that you tracked in utero 20 years later?
Absolutely. Well, not 20 years later, no, but in Poland, we're tracking children through age 8, 9, mm-hmm. 10, and in because we've done a series of studies there, so in the more recent study, the children are now becoming 5. We're continuing to follow them. In New York City, our oldest children in a large cohort are 11, and we hope to be able to continue to track the children in China as well.
My guest is Dr. Frederica Pereira. She's director of Columbia University's Center for Children's Environmental Health. And we're talking about air pollution in Beijing, not just the athletes, but the people who live in many of these big industrial cities in China. Now, you focused a lot of your study on a single Chinese city. Let's talk a little bit about Tongliang.
Yes, it has several names, but it's referred to often as Tongliang, and it's in Chongqing municipality in the midwestern part of China.
Mm-hmm.
And we chose that city because we learned that the government had mandated the shutdown of old type, very polluting coal-fired power plants that were not equipped with modern pollution control technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had the opportunity to enroll a first group of pregnant mothers and follow them and their children and to assess health and development. The first group was in utero during the power plant operation. Then the plant was shut down, and we had the chance to study a second group who were identical in every way, except that the power plant wasn't operating when they were conceived and in utero.
So what did you find?
Well, we found, first of all, let me explain that we measured exposure directly. We took a small sample of the fetal umbilical cord blood mm-hmm. and analyzed that in our laboratory. And the we here is my colleague, Deliang Tang at Columbia University, and we're working with others and Chinese partners. In any case, we measured the fingerprints of exposure in the cord blood and did that using a technique that measures the PAHs bound to DNA. And that gives a very precise measure of the amount of exposure that
wow.
baby had.
To be able to do that
yes,
is amazing.
Yes, it's a very sophisticated molecular approach. Mm-hmm. And then we followed the children. Again, the field team, the Chinese collaborators, followed the children through their second birthday and administered a test that is widely used in China and elsewhere called the Gazelle test to assess the child's developmental attainment. And then we analyzed the relationship between the exposure, the biomarker of exposure,
right.
PAHs, and the developmental outcomes in the children. And we adjusted for all the other known contributors
right.
to child development.
So what kinds of differences did you find between these two groups?
Well, we found differences in that in the first cohort, we did see a significant relationship between the levels of the PAH exposure, the DNA, PAH DNA, we call it an adduct, and delays and lower scores in the motor developmental area.
Mm-hmm.
Those were significant in the first cohort. Very similar, I mean, we'd also seen effects of the same pollutants in New York City on child development, so this was not surprising.
Right.
But then we looked at the second cohort, and we no longer saw those significant associations. Then when we just compared the two cohorts in a number of ways, we found that the levels of the biomarker of exposure, PAH on DNA, were reduced by 40%, and that the incidence of delay in motor development was also significantly reduced by about 65% in the second cohort compared to the first. So this was very good news,
yeah.
and it is a totally good news story for us. It's the first time we've been able to do such a positive study.
Is there any way of estimating the long-term risks that these kids face? You know, things like behavioral problems or infertility or cancer, you know. Is there any way to look ahead? And
well, one can do that only by following this cohort. Otherwise, it's inferential, and mm-hmm. we do hope to follow all of our cohorts forward so we can look at long-term irreversible effects. Because this very early test at age 2 is it's a standardized test that's used to screen children who may be intellectually at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an IQ test. It's not an irreversible change. It's not so that it's a limited finding, but statistically significant. And it's something that we would like to follow up on, certainly. But the positive aspect is that we no longer saw those same relationships in the unexposed second cohort.
Dr. Frederica Pereira is my guest. She is director of Columbia University's Center for Children's Environmental Health, and we're talking about a study that she and her colleagues conducted in China on the effects of PAHs, which are polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, and they are not good things. The effects of these are the result of the burning of organic matter, coal-fired, you know, coal-burning power plants, I don't know, barbecue grills,
traffic emissions is another major source.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about how you were able to go in and get these parents of these babies to participate in this study. I mean, sometimes it would seem to me that sometimes parents don't want to know the bad news.
Well, we found in all our studies in Europe and U.S. And in China that parents are very willing to participate because they feel it's a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they do get feedback if there is some sort of problem that they clinically relevant a problem that is diagnosed or seen or in the analyses of our blood samples, if we see, for example, a level of lead that exceeds the standard, we would inform and take some action, refer children. Mm-hmm. Similarly, if there's a developmental delay, we would refer children. So there is a positive aspect of participation.
Didn't you also once conduct a study of these adduct levels in adult lung cancer patients?
Yes, we have done those studies.
Mm-hmm. What did you find?
Well, we found that looking at people who were healthy when enrolled into a study and followed for many years, that baseline or enrollment level of the PAH DNA, we call it adducts, that fingerprint marker,
mm-hmm.
that particular marker was associated with lung cancer risk among smokers. So we were able to show some relationship to cancer. In the present study, we're really using this biomarker as an indicator of exposure rather than inferring anything about cancer risk from this particular biomarker. We wanted an individual measure of that child's mm-hmm. Exposure during fetal development.
Now, in going into China to do this study, was it important for you to have a Chinese collaborator?
Oh, certainly, yes. And we also went through all of the procedures to get institutional review board consent and, mm-hmm. and use informed consent and so forth. But there's a point, if I may, I want to make about the relevance of this study. We wrote at the end of our paper, and we believe that the results are relevant to other settings, other countries, including the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
Because these pollutants are ubiquitous, because we have seen similar effects in different populations, different ethnic groups, and because we don't see any evidence of a threshold or safe level for the exposure. And so we think that other countries in other settings can take a cue from Tongliang and work to reduce the levels of air pollution with, as we see them in our study, with benefits to the child's health and development.
So how do the PAH levels here in New York City compare with those that you found in Tongliang?
Well, after the intervention, the levels are very similar to what we see in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Before the government intervention, this is, before the plant shut down, they were somewhat higher. So we see those dropping down in the second group of children.
What do you see as the single most important part of the finding of your study?
Well, I think the most important part of the finding is that an action by government, this shutdown of a single coal-fired power plant that was very polluting, was the major polluting source in this city, had a measurable benefit for the children living in that city.
We're talking mostly about urban areas. Are PAH levels kind of negligible in very rural parts of the world, or are they just pretty much all over the place?
Well, we say they are all over the place, but certainly they are higher in urban industrialized areas.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask this. When did you first, as a scientist, become aware of these PAHs?
Oh, my goodness, that was during my doctoral research, and even before that. These are a class of well-known, well-characterized toxic air pollutants. They've been widely studied.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the work had been focused in cancer and also on adults. And my colleagues and I were very interested in focusing on the very early life stage, the fetal developmental window, one of exquisite susceptibility to PAHs and to many other environmental toxicants. And so with the goal in mind of prevention of childhood illness and developmental problems, we have zeroed in on them and the exposure during this window.
Now, when you, in New York, when you conducted these similar tests, how did you go about convincing pregnant women to participate?
Well, we explain the study. We explain that it is a research project and that it won't necessarily directly benefit their child. But we do provide a lot of information to the women in the study. Mm-hmm. We provide feedback on how their child is progressing, developmental milestones. We inform if there are any high values for lead or other known toxic pollutants for which there are standards. We give feedback when in New York City we have done some monitoring in the homes, and also we have measured pesticides as well as air pollutants. And we're following those children looking at asthma as well as developmental problems. So we give a lot of feedback on what to avoid in the home to protect children. When we found high levels of pesticides, we inform on alternatives to using these toxic pesticides and so forth. But a good news story in New York, we might say, not quite as dramatic as this one mm-hmm. in China, is that our results of our studies have been used to advocate or press for cleaner air in New York City and cleaner diesel bus fleets or cleaner yeah. MTA New York City bus fleets that have not relied on polluting diesel but have used clean air technology.
Which neighborhoods in New York City are better or worse than others?
Well, we've been studying the neighborhoods in northern Manhattan, the South Bronx, mm-hmm. Washington Heights, and Harlem, because these are the areas that our School of Public Health, the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University, serves. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important that we work with the community. But there we do see that there is quite an interlacing of major highways and transportation networks and
right.
and a tendency to cite, as in other minority or disadvantaged communities, to cite stationary sources like diesel bus depots or waste transfer stations. But we can't say that these pollutants are isolated to that particular area. Air moves around, and we also import air pollution from the Midwest, from coal-burning mm-hmm. states in the Midwest. Depending on traffic intensity and the height of buildings and all of these different factors, meteorological and physical factors, you can have a high pockets of higher air pollution throughout the city. So our results in the study we're doing here in Manhattan, we think, are not only relevant to those particular communities.
Some scientists have kind of complained a little about the current administration in Washington being unwilling to listen to scientists and scientific results of things if it doesn't jive with their worldview. Have you experienced any of that in presenting your findings?
Well, we found that there's great receptivity to our findings in New York City, locally in mm-hmm. New York City, and we've partnered with community groups like West Harlem Environmental Action and others who have made use of our results to press for cleaner policies. So I think in the last years, the work and the progress on environment has been done at the state and the local and state level rather than at the federal level.
Have you paid much attention to the environmental policies of either presidential candidate, either John McCain or Barack Obama?
Of course I'm paying attention to their environmental policies.
And what do you think?
And I'm very happy to see that the American public is paying attention, and they are addressing this issue, dealing with the problem of energy and the environment. These are inextricably linked.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to mention one thing. It's possible with coal to clean up, to have cleaner coal-burning power plants.
Right.
And certainly the type of plant that was shut down in Tongliang is a bad model, very polluting, without modern pollution control technology. The problem, though, with coal in general is that, and other fossil fuel, as we are now heavily relying on these, the U.S. relies on coal for 50% of its energy or its electricity, mm-hmm. China for 75% of its electricity. The problem with coal is that it does emit CO2, and that's one of the major climate-altering gases. So it can be cleaned up in the public health way, but then there is a problem still with the CO2. So
we've got a minute or so left. Yeah. I'm curious about your feelings on the cleanliness of nuclear power plants?
Well, I'm certainly not an expert on nuclear power plants and the cleanliness, but certainly they do not emit the same pollution.
Mm-hmm.
They pose a different set of challenges and questions, problems. And that issue is being debated within the whole context of our energy future and our reducing our dependence on fossil fuel,
mm-hmm.
Which would benefit children in so many ways, as well as the rest of society. But children are particularly impacted not only by the toxic pollutants from fossil fuel burning, but also they would be most impacted by the predicted effects of global climate change. So we have to think about the entire picture, looking at the renewables, at energy efficiency, sustainable buildings,
mm-hmm.
and so forth, and nuclear as well, but also and cleaner uses of fossil fuel, if that's possible, addressing both the toxicants and the CO2.
Couple of seconds,
yeah.
And really more than a couple, but is there anything that listeners who might be right now breathing New York City air can do to protect themselves?
Well, let's see. It's always good to have buffers, you know, in terms of healthy diets and good levels of antioxidants. That's good in general.
Mm-hmm.
People can make sure that their home environment is free of tobacco smoke. The take it outside
yeah.
mandate, if you must smoke, don't do it in here.
Mm-hmm.
Avoiding toxic chemicals, pesticides, cleaners, all those things.
And that's a start, but that's where we have to leave it for today. Thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Frederica Pereira is director of Columbia University's Center for Children's Environmental Health. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Well, you're very welcome, Carrie. I enjoyed it.